Welcome back to Insight is Capital. I'm your host, Pierre Daly. If you've been anywhere near the Canadian ETF industry over the past decade, you've heard today's guests' names probably more than once. Between them, they've helped define how ETFs are marketed, explained, and distributed in Canada. First, Tammy Cash, an award-winning chartered marketer, now Director of Distribution Strategy at BMO ETFs. Tammy's career has spanned key leadership roles at Horizons ETFs and Vanguard Investments before joining BMO, where she's blending her deep marketing expertise with strategic distribution insights to help shape the firm's ETF presence in Canada. Tammy is also Global Co-President of Women in ETFs, a global organization with over 13,000 members across 38 chapters, dedicated to empowering women and promoting equity in the ETF industry. And then there's Alain Desbiens, who just returned last week officially as BMO ETF's newly appointed vice chair, returning after a brief sabbatical. Alain spent 15 years as the original senior ETF wholesaler and vice president of sales at BMO ETFs, building relationships, educating advisors, and making complex investment ideas feel straightforward. He's back to help steer BMO's ETF and Canadian Depositary Receipts strategy into its next chapter. Today, we're going to go back to their early days, explore what they've learned along the way, and hear their visions for the future of investing and the future of ETFs, and maybe learn a little more about who they are beyond the resumes.
This is Insight is Capital. Join us in our fireside chats with some of the most fascinating people in finance to discuss their insights on life, markets, macro, investment strategy, and much more.
Alain, Tammy, welcome. It is so great to have you on the show and to get this chance to talk to you.
Thank you for inviting us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you again. I want to go, now that I have you both in the same place and at the same company, which is incredible, I want to go back to the beginning. Tammy, Alain, take us back to your early days in the Canadian ETF industry. What drew you in? What did those first few years look like from your perspective?
I have to say, I'll never forget the first day I met Alain at the Insight ETS conference and was, being at a competitor, super jealous at the momentum. Based on some of his strategies at that conference, but I'm absolutely thrilled to get to partner with him here at BMO. Going way back to when I was just a young gal, I started my career in finance, and it was a bit of an anomaly for me, having studied law and made my way in the consulting world and then working in the hedge fund space. And what drew me to ETFs was I have a twin sister. And at the time, back in 2008, she was working at Claymore Investments, then a real leader in the early days of our ETF growth in this country. And she kept talking about the ETF instrument and the democratization of investing and low fees and transparency. And she really candidly converted me and educated me about the benefits. And from there, I joined the industry back when I think at the time had only 10 firms. And for those who are keeping up, we're now at 45 ETF sponsors in this country. And the beauty of those early days was it was collaborative. It was a small community, and we were really focused on educating, certainly educating advisors on the benefits of ETFs, but also investors. And it's been just a real pleasure to be part of the industry's evolution in that capacity.
I began in the industry in the trust company. I've been an advisor. I've been a branch manager. I've distributed funds. I've distributed seg funds. Before joining BMO, I was at Fiera Capital, starting their alt division there on the retail side. So I began in April 2010, the same month basically that Kevin Prinz, our head of sales, and Mark Webster, who's now on the institutional side, joined the organization. Like you mentioned, we were three seniors guys, that started indeed the ETF sales team. And, you know, we were just three to cover Canada. So I remember the people at the time were telling me, what? You're going to sell ETF to BMO? ETF, we're not there to stay. It's just a trend. This is the biggest mistake that you're making going there. Landscape was quite different then in 2010. You know, there were four ETF providers at the time, $50 billion of AUM in the industry, and around 100 ETF. BMO had 28 ETF. We had $500 million under management. And I remember my focus at the time was to speak about the ETF team as much as I was speaking about the 28 ETF, because I wanted to make sure that the IE and the PM knew that within the BMO ETF team, we had one of the most experienced team in the world in terms of ETF expertise, with Rajiv Silgardal as the head of BMO GAM and BMO ETF. Still today, I did a Morningstar event that this year, we need to remind people that the first equity ETF in the world was done in Canada. The first fixed income ETF in the world was done in Canada. There's a part of our DNA in the ETF world. So this is really important to speak about this. So again, like Tammy mentioned, you know, how could I say this? Like, education was really key. And I remember at the beginning, education was really key because at the time, well, let's say that the active side of the mutual fund industry was not really favorable to the ETF. And let's be frank, if you remember, Tammy, there was a lot of disinformation and myths around the ETF. Things have changed since. So it's normal. ETF changed the investment industry. You spoke about the democratization. So it's normal when you're disruptive as an industry, it creates waves. So I would say at the beginning, I saw that the ETF could be disruptive and it could create waves. And I loved it. I knew we were into something.
Absolutely. I keenly remember the apprehension that, you know, to your point, Alain, that arose at the beginning of the ETF era that we're now very, very squarely in. You know, disruption always has this way of making those kinds of waves. And so, you know, people are initially full of consternation and, you know, are you kidding me? And you know, just to repeat your own word, what?
And it's funny because at the time when I joined, there was four ETF providers.
Yeah.
But there was 100, basically 20 mutual fund companies. And today there's 45 ETF providers and there's still 120 something mutual fund companies. And there's 2.5 times funds that there is ETF. So I would say that we're in the disrupted industry that had a growth rate that has been extraordinary. So I loved all those 14 years in the industry, and I'm glad to be back.
Yeah.
I think the last decade in terms of the CAGR growth for the industry, for the ETF space, has been 21%. And definitely that momentum continues.
When I started, I think ETF represented like 5% of the fund industry. Now we're representing a quarter of the fund industry. So it's still growing. Funds also is growing. It's just it's a more mature industry. And both of them can, you know, cohabit. You know, they can be combined in portfolio allocation. It's just that
absolutely
growing industry that is growing really fast.
And many of the mutual fund companies have entered the ETF space. And because of the competitive pressures, the fees on mutual funds have come down in order to be more competitive.
There are some clients that will still use F-class mutual funds, and there's clients who will still only use ETF. I think what BMO did change is to offer a lot of our strategy on both platforms.
Right.
So it's not one or the other. It's one with the other.
Yeah, right, so well said, Alain. It's about them being complementary instruments in the construction of a balanced portfolio. And we're seeing more and more of that these days.
Right. So that's a great picture of where it all started. I want to stay in that era for a moment. Those early days weren't just about building careers. You know, they were really about building an industry. What did you learn in the process?
Resilience, for one.
Yeah. You do learn.
Look, in my experience, it was an opportunity for me in entering the ETF space to not only bring, I haven't been keeping track of the products to market, but a real legacy of about 70 or 80 funds, many of them, most of them, very enduring. And not only in Canada, but in the US and Latin America as well. But specific to the Canadian market, the partnership with advisors and with, Ellen said it, it is a real commitment to education and to thinking about where these products serve the needs of clients at the end of the day, and looking at it from the perspective of clients first and the problems that many of these instruments can solve on behalf of advisors' clients. And when I think about the lessons learned, it really is about that education and the intersection of education and partnership today. And I might approach it a bit differently than Ellen does, being in the field. But a lot of it is listening to advisors as well and adapting, and whether that means directly with product strategy and hearing ideas from the field, but also in really being laser focused on the kind of partnership requirements that they have as they move forward. We know with the evolution of the industry that people are consuming information differently. Advisors are people just like their clients, investors. We need to evolve as the industry evolves along with it. But at its core, it still comes down to making sure that we provide clarity, congruency, and real education to advisors and investors.
It's funny, because if one thing that I've learned in the past 14 years is it's an advantage to be Canadian. Being a Canadian provider and have a PM team based in Canada was and is still an asset for advisors and Canadian investors and for education. I was mentioning it before. The first ETF in the world was done in Canada, so we need to be proud of this. And we can change the marketplace because we have the knowledge for that. Also, what I've learned around, you know, with the past 14 years is having a robust toolbox. And I remember I gave an interview to advisor analyst in Montreal, and you were asking me about this, and I was saying how important it was as a provider to have a huge toolbox. And I think we're really proud about the BMO ETF dashboard and numerous ETF tools, because this is so key to help advisors and investors. IDs, podcasts like you do, strategies and insight, ETF centers, ETF tool. We do have our two-minute updates. We've got institutional and retail insight, all at the same place, and in the dashboard. And I think also what is important around the education is we're more than ETF. We've got tools on CRM3 that is coming, LinkedIn for advisors, business development, other value-added presentation, having tool to explain them, to put them in perspective, having tool to help, portfolio construction is really key. And also go beyond this. I mean, as an ETF providers, we need to help the IA, the portfolio managers, with CRM3.
It's tools that surface insights for the whole industry. It is not self-serving. It is absolutely intended to be providing gold star education to those exploring investment solutions and increasingly portfolio construction.
The dashboard is the epicenter of this. Like, just Google BMO ETF dashboard, you'll find all the tool. But there's really section for our institutional clients. There's really section for the retail clients, the advisor, the portfolio manager. There's ton of great tools for portfolio construction. But more and more, we need to help the third channel, which is the do-it-yourself. So really, we aim to be the best at this.
I left my role as an advisor in 2003. You know, first of all, it took me about maybe almost a year to unload all of the angst that I felt on behalf of my clients. But what I realized in the process as well was that I knew so little about the bond market. And I had done it for 15 years. I had been an advisor for 15 years. And what I did know about the bond market was really just an iota of knowledge about what the bond market actually represents. I realized that there are gigantic gaps in knowledge.
Now it's different. We're speaking about small business. People think that sometimes there's 10, there's 15, there's 20 people. You know, before, having a book of $1 billion was rare in Canada. It's not rare anymore. So now, sometimes we deal with the young CFAs that the portfolio manager in charge of the business development do hire, and we've got discussion with them. Because, you know, more and more, they cannot deal with 10, 20 mutual fund / ETF providers. They tend to do business with 5 to 7. And those people, you know, they really try to look at what we have and to see where it fits based on their conviction inside of their portfolios.
This comes down to the reality of what we know is happening as well in the industry, is people want to work with partners they can trust and that have enduring, strong products, of course. Have that commitment to helping with practice management and building your business. They have to be all things to all people. And that includes these days, digital marketer, chief strategist, and really rounding out support in all of the ways that advisors are being impacted is part of what advisors are expecting from partners as well. But you get what they're going through. And let's face it, it's an industry in real transition and disruption. And the challenges facing advisors, particularly as they look to either transitioning a book of business or partnering with another business, all of the things that we know advisors go through.
It's interesting that you both hit on themes of adaptation and resilience, because both your skills are different. So while your skills are different, your roles have always been connected, right? The marketing distribution bridge, you are both arguably two of the most significant advocates of ETF adoption in the ETF ecosystem anywhere. You highlighted the fact that the ETF was invented in Canada.
You would have no idea how many times, I'm sure Ellen's in this position and I am as well, in correcting some of our American friends.
I bet.
You're right.
You've both gone to the big U.S. conferences.
Yes.
So you've both had tons of interaction with your U.S. counterparts and advisors in the U.S.
One anecdote there, you know, Deborah Fuhr, indeed, Tammy.
Yeah. ETFGI.
She's an icon. She's a legend. And I remember my first conference in U.S., she was saying, oh, by the way, dear Americans, it's not you invented the first ETF in the world. It's the Canadians, the first equity and the first fixed income. So that was cool to get that recognized there.
I collaborate with Deb in my personal passion as well through women in ETFs, and have been in the room when we both lock eyes when that comes up. Yes.
Tammy, can before we continue, because I definitely want to touch on your work with women in ETFs and your role as global co-president. Can you talk about what you're doing or you know, the distance you've come since beginning that role, since taking on that responsibility? How have things evolved in that respect?
So speaking of Deb Fuhr, founding member of Women in ETFs, and I've been involved with WE since 2013. So it's 11 years, roughly, of service for me and of passion for me, with an aim to connect, support, and inspire women working in the ETF industry. And we are now up to, I think we are at 38 chapters across the globe.
Right.
And really, we're in a phase at Women in ETFs of really making sure that in all of those regions in which we operate across the globe, we provide great value to our members. So we do that by working with conferences to make sure that there's an equal representation of talented people from the ETF ecosystem and pipeline. But candidly, a big part of what we do other than mentorship is university outreach, which is a real passion of mine. Being someone who didn't, unlike Ellen, I wasn't raised in the industry per se, And so for me, it really resonates with me in the advisory space where today, sadly, we still sit at 17% representation of women as financial advisors in Canada. And I think about how rewarding the career can be for young women and the potential given the seismic shift that's happening in terms of wealth managed by women, approaching $5 trillion by 2030, and the opportunity that that presents. We know that women, 70% of women whose spouse passes away or inherits wealth, tends to leave their spouse's primary advisor. This is a significant opportunity, not only for all advisors to really start paying attention to that reality, but also for young women who don't see a viable path, whether it's on our side in terms of asset management or as a financial advisor. So this is a message that I'm super passionate about presenting in all of our university outreach across the globe, because it isn't a problem that just exists in Canada. And that, for me, has been really rewarding to see some of the examples of those career paths started and careers transformed and changed and public profiles candidly built. But I do want to call out that our membership, as it stands today, is about 13% from men in our community. And those allies have been really instrumental in building really strong networking opportunities, mentorship opportunities, and being committed to saying, yes, in 2025, we still stand at 17%. And that's about a change as it relates to the advisory space.
There are some amazing careers being developed by women in the business. Just recently, last week, we were talking with Rick Edelman. You know, Rick's words were, you know, God bless them for deciding to come into the field, because women are incredible financial advisors.
And one thing to mention that we do is think beyond commerce programs. I remember working in the early days at a hedge fund and discovering that a lot of our PMs studied philosophy, they studied history, they studied other subject matter before getting into the business.
Right.
And that rich cognitive diversity matters. And there's a place certainly for those, you know, in the next generation who find an ideal path to commerce programs. But we really want to make sure that we're telling the story of viable careers in technology, in operations, in marketing, and on the trading desk, even if you didn't pursue a commerce degree. So that's really special, whether we do it in a one-to-many format, to see that it's transforming the industry. It's definitely, when I think of legacy, it's all about that. As much as I think it's really exciting to see that products that we bring to market can change investing outcomes for Canadians, and that's incredible. Seeing the shift of someone who just didn't even know that this career existed. And I've attended Women in Wealth conferences with many advisors who say, the women in the room who say, it's actually a great gig as a mom too, because it's quite flexible. And it provides lots of rich experience in ways I couldn't have imagined. So getting that message to people who don't even, you know, who can't even fathom that it's a possibility is a real treat.
We should go in psychology department.
Yes.
The people that I found the most fascinating in the business comes from that background. And honestly, when you speak with portfolio managers, advisors, this is such a key part of what they do. So you're right. We should think outside the box. And Pierre, I think we just heard passion right now when she spoke about her involvement in Women of ETF and how important that is to make a difference. This is kind of cool, you know, in your life to be able to make a difference. So I think when we heard you, this is what we felt.
Well, I love it.
And if I may, because we're speaking about the advisor, female advisor, male advisor. In the U.S., there's already studies that are telling that we're missing 100,000 advisors in the U.S. And this is a reality, though. It's tougher and tougher to get into the business. It's tougher to pass the few years in the business. So what we see is teams getting bigger. So people join teams rather than going along, because being a rookie in the business is really tough.
It is tough.
We need more IAs, and the growth of wealthy household is superior to the growth of the numbers of advisors. What a great business.
So, Tammy, just to, you know, like, your career on the ETF side now, your career has been about telling the ETF story in a way that resonates. And for Alain, yours has been about getting that story in front of the right people, in front of advisors, institutions, investors. How do you see those two disciplines working together? How did you bridge the gaps, for starters, between the vision and the delivery?
Absolutely love this subject. My role at BMO is really at the intersection between strategy and execution and digital experience. And I'm very much focused on what is the digital experience we're providing clients at BMO, whether they're investors, advisors, or institution. And it's critical that we have an extremely strong partnership with Ellen and team and those individuals that are out in the field in this capacity. In terms of the gaps, I'm sure maybe I'll hand that over to Ellen to discuss. But what gets me fired up, honestly, is, you know, the response and reality that every aspect of an advisor's role and position these days is in disruption. And increasingly, technology is playing a critical role in the ability to access content effectively, efficiently, in the ability to be able to work with their clients in a way that is seamless and provides a positive experience and underscores their value proposition. And that's changing as well. What value are they adding? Different now than it was, you know, not even 10 years ago. And I am thrilled about the partnership that we have as it relates to what that marketing client experience that is increasingly digital and online means in terms of supporting advisors and supporting LN and team in the field as well.
BMO had, for more than a decade, the biggest growth of the industry. 12 years in a row, we finished number one in net sales. That's like winning the Stanley Cup 12 years in a row. I come from Montreal. Even the Habs didn't do this. So, yeah, we were an early player. We had a good timing, great timely solution. We listened to the clients. We had a great team. But in retrospect, I think our success was also the fact that all the internal teams worked together. Management, sales, product, PM group, support, marketing. You know, the story has evolved. It's getting more complex. There's a lot of noise. There's more players. There's more product. But working together towards the mission is really key. And I think, again, as a Canadian firm, it's quite easy. We're all on the 43rd floor. So it's kind of easy. You know, I came back July 28th. So we're now August 18th. So the first 2 weeks for me was to meet all the key people from the organization. Management, product, sales, PM group, marketing, support. I think some days I had 12 meetings in a day just to understand what excites them. What are their top priorities so that that I can make that benefits, you know, to the BMO ETF mission and our client. If you want to win internally, all the team needs to be aligned for the partnership and for the client experience. So this is really key for us.
Alain, you know, when you first left last year, we thought, we're really going to miss him. Like, the industry is going to miss Alain.
Thank you.
I think advisors have responded and expressed their enthusiasm, their excitement about your return. We're excited.
Thank you.
I mean,
Joseph, I am excited to be back.
You know, the feeling's mutual. We're delighted that you're back. I had a question here, which was more about the past, but I think I want to ask you about it for the present and the future, which is, what do you think are, what is it that seems to you to be potentially impossible obstacles or challenges to the business now?
Today, there's 45 ETF shops in Canada. There's roughly 125 mutual fund companies. So there's thousands and thousands of products. I was having an interview in the month of May with Rajiv. You know, it was since 2016 that I spoke to Rajiv. And I wanted, well, because now I write for Investment Executive, Financier Investissement, and I wanted to do a big interview with him because the industry changed so much. He was such at the beginning of the industry, the growth of the industry. He's a Canadian icon. And I remember when we spoke about this, he says, you know, he has a problem to keep up with all the new stuff that is coming. But like I say, let's think about the market. The market is divided one-third, one-third, one-third right now. One-third of the asset is institutional. One-third of the asset is retail advisors, portfolio managers. The other third is with the Canadian investors. And don't forget, we speak to all those channels as an ETF provider, as a fund provider. So, and I share his view, like where we need to do more is on the investor side, the do-it-yourself. This is what he felt, that there's a lot of people there that buy products and they don't really understand what they're buying. And that's probably the worst when you're buying a solution, which if it's a fund, an alternative solution, an exchange-traded fund one, index or active, whatever it is, what you have as a return is not what you were expected from that product because you could not open, you know, inside of the product that look how it's built. So I say that we still do a lot of that, explain how it's built and trying to make it the most transparent as possible. It's less complicated with the broad index ETF, and this is where the vast majority of the sell is still. This is where the vast majority of the AUM is, but there's a growth on the active side. There's a growth on the option side. There's a growth on the crypto side. And this is a side of the business that probably needs a bit more explanation. I see it as an opportunity.
Something, yeah, something that you want to take on.
And we've got the people. And, yeah. I mean, across Canada, we've got 20 exchange-traded fund specialists servicing the institutional, the retail, the investors, the capital market. When I began, we were three. So, and those 20 ETF specialists do collaborate with all of our BMO Gamo sellers. So there's a lot of people there on the ground to get a second opinion, to look under the hood. The toolbox is really key to help, you know, build better portfolios, to help portfolio constructions. We care about this and we think it is important, but it's not known that much. What is going to make, you know, the advisor win is probably a better psychologic, you know, background sometimes than being a CFA. We need to be cognizant of that.
And Tammy, in your role since you joined BMO ETFs, what are the most important conversations that you're fielding?
Mm. Oh, wow. That's a good question. I think making sure that as we evolve, we're evolving, whether it's platforms, solutions, to keep pace with what investors need as well. So Alain talked about the increased focus on the real need to provide quality, clarity, and education and solutions and insights to investors. And when I think about the responsibility that we have increasingly, a lot of the conversations that I'm having today are around investor outcomes and making sure that we're doing everything that we can do to be a part of that conversation. So we've got a team stood up where we publish content and make it available to really make sure that whether it's influencers who are gatekeepers to, you know, increasingly sizable communities, partnerships with some of those communities are critical to make sure that the information that is objective and clear and accurate gets out there and distributed appropriately. So we're blessed in that we've got great partners at BMO Investor Line, where many of our clients actually execute on from a direct standpoint. And lots of innovation is coming there with some of the work that I'm focused on related to digital experience, which I'm excited about.
I bet. Yeah. I bet. I mean, it's just expanding at such an enormous rate. The overarching goal of investors is to retire comfortably and on time. And you know, it's not hard to understand that sometimes investors are thinking, you know, I want to get there sooner, mm-hmm. Or that, you know, advisors are being challenged by their clients to get them there sooner, or they're hearing about all the speculative exploits in the market that are making, you know, some investors rich, wealthy very quickly. So it's difficult for investors because, you know, they go to cocktail parties, they talk to their neighbors. Oh, you know, I own NVIDIA. I've got, you know, I've been investing in Bitcoin since 10 years ago. Wow. You know, where were you when, you know, the advisor, that is, you know, like, these are some of the things that advisors have to field, right? Which is that their clients are having conversations with all sorts of friends and neighbors about these wins. And they're wondering sometimes, you know, why their prudent advisor hasn't approached them about some of these areas that you know, made them successful investors, at least for the time being. Mm-hmm. So anyways, back to our core conversation.
I like
back
it.
To our,
but it's, yeah. it's all legitimate discussion. Yeah. And we know that from time to time, there's waves of interest in more speculative asset. And this is where I think the advisors gave advice and explained that he does risk management, that he wants to maintain them rich.
That's right.
This is really important.
Come back to you. This is the value of advice. In
men. Right.
And I would, as much as, yes, advice.
That's a big part of your agenda.
Yes. And as much as advisors are likely hearing some of those anecdotes and stories, there are equal amounts, if not more, who realize, oh, I need support and guidance here. I've made a decision based on what, you know, might be a sleeve of my investment portfolio, and either it turned out to be not so great, and now I'm more inclined to admit, yes.
It's funny because
it's important.
But it's funny because we're speaking about the speculative end of the market, but in the same time, the Canadian market is home of roughly, what, $7.7 trillion of investable assets. And in this, there's basically $2 trillion in bank account and quasi-cash. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's enough excitement in the market for those people to make a better return without having to go to the leverage. I think this is for the sophisticated investors, and you're a major, you're vaccinated, good for you. But I think the vast majority of advisors are trying to bring the people on board so that they have money up to 90 years old, 95 years old. They want to maintain and grow the wealth of their clients. So there's enough excitement in the markets, and there's enough clients to, you know, to bring on the side of a proper diversification rather than being in cash or GICs. There was billions and billions of dollars in the past few years that went into GIC. Remember when rates went up? A lot of those GICs now are maturing. So we need to have a good conversation about just a plain balanced diversified portfolio. I don't know if we need to convince the people that wants to get rich, you know, in the next 5 days. I don't think that's the clientele for the advisors. There is enough clients that need a proper diversification that we need to help. 2/3 of the money in Canada is in taxable account. There's great solution with the cover call with tax efficient fixed income to have a deeper conversation with client. And for this, we're there to help.
What do you see as the biggest challenges you're ready to tackle in the period ahead?
It's more about opportunity, and it's about the opportunity to make sure that we're adapting with investor needs and with the toolbox that we've created, and that we make sure people are aware it exists. You can have the best educational materials out there, but we really need to connect those seeking it with the information that is there. When I think about the evolution of the way investors, advisors, and institutions are looking for support from firms like BMO, adaptation and evolution with strategy, technology, and distribution at its core are those areas that I think get me excited, where I hope to be placed in my career as I move forward.
With more than 200 ETF, more than 34 CDRs, I mean, we still need to educate around all the great new solution that we've launched in the past 12 months and the past 24 months. We need to put it into perspective also with CRM tree coming. The fact that, like I was mentioning before, we're offering, I think, the most complete and comprehensive suite of low-cost beta, smart beta, active, alternative ETF and CAD in the US. But basically also make sure that we're different from the other ETF providers.
If we fast forward to 2030, to 2030, what do you think the Canadian ETF industry will look like? And where do you see yourself, or where do you want to be in shaping that future?
The first article I wrote when I joined, you know, as a columnist, investment executive, Finance Investissement,
yep.
I wanted to make a bang. So I said, hey, you know, I'm going to speak to you about the next $1 trillion industry. And I was feeling a bit cocky saying, you know, that 2030 should be, you know, maybe the potential date for this. And funny enough, I think in April and May, I saw the PwC 2025 report saying that we could see that in Canada in June 2029. So even faster than I had predicted. But a couple of key trends I think that we're going to see in the years to come. Innovation is attracting investors, but brings more complexity. Competition will still eat up. I mean, we've never seen so much competition, so much noise, because there's a lot of new product. I still think that the future of ETF does include liquid alternative. I'm thinking, you know, our Quantium with Lulin, the long short that we have, this is really important. More and more portfolios evolve and including a 10% of alternative. Bip and Ray, our strategist, speaks often about gold, about infrastructure,
right,
about our long short. I still think education is going to be key in 2030 because that doesn't change. We're still going to be, you know, to explain, to educate, to serve as the client. We cannot be replaced by AI. I don't think so.
I think a lot of those claims about AI replacing a lot of jobs, that may be so in some in some quarters.
People need to see people. They need
That's
to have
right.
a real interaction. So it can be seen as a tool, but I don't think it's going to replace us. It's not going to replace the advisor. Maybe some segment of it. But again, the
exactly.
growth of the affluent household is outpacing the growth of the numbers of advisors. There's so much people that need advice in Canada. So let's look for the people that need it the most. And if some people wants to burn themselves, you know, as a do-it-yourself investors, well, unfortunately, at one point, they'll learn it. But there's so much things to learn. And I don't think in 2030, that's going to change. We're going to be all more wealthy. And I think more and more advisors are going to become a rarity for the mass affluent, for people that have 100K. It's going to be tough to find good advice, to find a financial planner. It's going to be scarce.
It's only a matter of time before DIY investors actually capitulate to the idea that they need an advisor.
This is why now, yeah. 2025, there's teams of advisors that are highly sophisticated.
Yes.
In terms of financial planning, estate planning, I mean, a big thing in Canada is business. Business people are selling their business. There's transition there.
That's right.
There's so much need for advice. I'm not really afraid about this. Opportunity.
I share that. I share your confidence. I want to bring this back to something more personal for both of you. And that's the mark that each of you hopes to leave on the space. When people look back on your contributions, what is it that you hope that they'll remember most?
I hope the industry and the people that make the industry so vibrant, like you, by the way, will remember my PVP,
where
I call my personal value proposition and my engagement.
Yeah.
I hope that they will remember that I've tried over the years to build that value proposition and that it evolves around trust. Trust ethics and knowledge around our industry, around ETF, and my relationship with all the investment advisors, portfolio managers, investors, and my colleagues of the industry. Also, I hope that they remember that I love what I do, that I'm passionate about what I do and about our industry. I mean, it's been a privilege to work in that industry for more than 30 years. And you know what's great? is I still want to make a difference. And I think my new role allowed me to make a difference. This is really rewarding. So basically, it's a privilege today to be one of the ambassadors of the BMO ETF, BMO GAM brand, and to partner with clients to deliver an exceptional investor's experience. This is what I hope people will remember about me, if they have to remember about me.
If I go back to 2018, where we first, we first became acquainted and met you, it was very memorable. First of all,
thank you.
You radiate an enthusiasm and a love and a passion for the work that you're doing.
It's a
for
people,
all of the work that you're doing.
But it's a people industry. People think it's a financial. It's product. It's financial. It's math. But so much more than this. Like I say, I think everyone should have a background in psychology because honestly, I've been an advisor like you. I've been a branch manager.
Right.
This is what makes the people win in the business, their capacity of taking their glasses and say, Pierre, give me your glasses. And I'm going to see life the way you see life. Tammy, give me your glasses. And I'm going to see life the way you see life. So more and more, I think people need to do this. I was hearing Tammy speak with so much passion about, you know, woman of ETF, what she did in her life. I remember when I've met you and Joseph, and I thought, wow, those guys are super professional. What's important is to be on your ex. What is important is to make a difference. And wow, are we lucky. We can make a difference. So.
Well, I think we all share that. I think we all share that. That passion, that idea that we can do, you know, we can help, we can do something for the people that we serve. And, you know, we can really make a difference. And, you know, we start every day thinking, you know, what would we like to know today? What would we like to receive today? What intelligence would we like to learn? You know, what would we like to
working
pick up
with
on?
Brain minds and people, this is so rewarding. This is this is probably what missed me the most in the past 15 months.
Tammy, so what do you hope people remember about you the most?
As much as I'm really proud of the small part that I've played in my career around investment strategies, around educational programs, it's not platforms, it's not products, it's making an impact and an impact in the way I think that I've shown up as a leader at the organizations that I've been at. And to me, I'm rooted to being laser focused on people. And that translates into what I do, whether it's with We or in my work at BMO or in my career since candidly I started. It's all about a curiosity for how to better serve the people. And in this instance, thinking ahead to advisors and who they serve and doing what's right for them and by them.
Right.
And ensuring that I operate with integrity. So I think purpose and impact for me are the two things that come to mind. And they show up differently in my passion work through We and in the work that I do here at BMO. But very, very rooted in both of those things.
Wonderful. Tammy, Alain, thank you both for your incredibly valuable insight and sharing some of your personal magic with us. It's been an honor to have you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for the great conversation.
Likewise,
thank you.
I've learned about my colleague, so I should do something like this with each of my colleagues at BMO GAM. I've learned so much more than I knew about you and the way you see stuff. So thanks for the conversation, Guna. Thanks for the conversation, Tammy.
Thank you both.
It was great.